Right now it is time to bring in Arthur Schwartz, the food maven.
Scotch and soda, mud in your eye.
There he is, ladies and gentlemen.
Well, mud in your eye is right.
Well, I played Scotch and Soda because you posted something about this song last week,
well,
I think, on
Facebook.
Yeah,
well, Bob has been posting his own recordings because he's recorded. He has actually a CD of songs incomplete that he used to sing on my radio program on WOR. And we used to do, you know, I don't know what they're called in radio parlance. So, by the way, endangered broadcaster, here I am. In any case.
Bumpers are called bumpers.
No, mud in your eye is, you know, very appropriate for today's, I'll call it my kvetch of the week. But I go yesterday, I participated, not bought, but was selling, at a flea market yesterday, a local church. And in their parking lot, and I sold nothing. I didn't even make the cost of the table. In fact, I gave away more than I sold because I just didn't want to go home with this stuff again. So, like, a little boy came by with his parents, and it ends up he's a map kid. He loves maps, and I had a whole box of maps and guidebooks from Bob and my world travels that we're now disposing of. I don't think we're going back to some of these places, and the places that we are going back to, I think we know well enough now that we don't need. Well, maps are always handy. As people who don't have, you know, GPS on their phone, a map is an extraordinary help when you're in a foreign place. Anyway, back to, I needed a drink. That's what this is leading up to. So we go to our favorite saloon, you know, it's Sunday. I need a hit of something after this disappointing. I wasn't devastated, believe me, but it was a nice experience. So I ordered, stupidly, a Bloody Mary. I say stupidly.
Why stupidly? Yeah, I was going
to
say that.
I couldn't think of anything else to get. So I said, oh, you know, I was exhausted. I said, okay, just give me a Bloody Mary. It's Sunday. And I, you know, once every blue moon, I... How often do blue moons come, Jill? You might know that. I have a Bloody Mary, and I look forward to it when I order it. So I get this glass. Oh, so they tell me you can go make your own Bloody Mary. The mix is in this container, and then there are all these condiments that you can add.
What is this?
I said, you know, I'm too exhausted. Just make me a Bloody Mary, please. So they bring me this drink, and I take one look at it, and I figure it's not your classic Bloody Mary, but that could be okay. You know, I can take a jalapeno garnish, a pickled jalapeno garnish, or even a pickle garnish.
It's good that we don't go out together.
Pardon me?
I said it's good that we don't go out together.
Well,
I don't think...
No, I mean one of those would be okay. But really, the classic, and I'll get to an actual classic recipe in the whole story of Bloody Mary in a second, but is a rib of celery. Can you deal with that, Jill?
No, of course. My point is you at least were tolerant enough to get past the jalapeno. You got past
I wasn't tolerant enough. Don't to the waist. I'm not tolerant at all. I take one look at the drink. And I noticed something black on the rim of the glass, and I said, oh, is that pepper? And she said, smoked pepper. You know. Anyway, I took one sip, and I said, I can't drink this, which actually got the owner out from behind wherever he was, not in view.
But the bar? He didn't make it, did he?
He was not at the bar.
Okay.
He was not. You know what? I've been to this place a million times. Off and on, I'm on, you know, it's okay now. Anyway. Off and on over, I don't know how many years, but enough years. And I've never met the guy. But my not being able to drink... By the way, they were very nice. Although the bartender was annoyed with me that I didn't lie. You know, what they have is this mix in the jar. And what happened was I was there late. It was like 3 p.m. It was almost all gone. And what was left at the bottom of this, you know, it's one of those things that they put lemonade in and it has a spigot. And so all that was left was the sludge at the bottom. Maybe this was good at the beginning of the day. But at the end of the day, it tasted like pickle juice with a lot of other stuff. I will use the other four-letter word in there. Actually, I called it schmutz.
Yeah, schmutz is good.
I had a hip waitress who I said, "You know what schmutz is?" She says, "Absolutely." I said, "This has too much schmutz in it." And she took it back, and then the bartender came by with a small glass of tomato juice to water down the schmutz into what it should have been to begin with, but even that couldn't help it at this point. So I didn't want to drink that, and that's when the owner came out and was apologetic in a way. But then I realized this is a generational thing. I thought this guy was maybe even a millennial. Ends up he's in his early 40s. So maybe he should know better. But he told me very proudly that that for a contest, for a Bloody Mary contest that he was forced to enter, don't ask that story, he infused bacon fat. Oh, we use a lot of bacon in my restaurant. He infused bacon fat in the vodka before mixing it with his other schmutz. So bacon-flavored, I don't know, would bacon fat flavor the vodka? I'm not even going to contemplate that. He says he ties it in cheesecloth and just puts it in the vodka. A greasy Bloody Mary. So this, of course, whenever I have something terrible in a restaurant, I'll have to run out, get the ingredients, and make it at home. I don't keep tomato juice in the house, and I don't keep horseradish in the house because, you know, horseradish has a shelf life. Even in the refrigerator, it doesn't last all that long. So I would have to buy those two things. But, you know, a classic Bloody Mary is a very simple drink. It has some New York history. It was actually invented in Paris at a bar that became known as Harry's Bar, but in fact was originally called Harry's New York Bar. But it was a French bartender, I think I pronounced it correctly, Petiot, P-E-T-I-O-T, for those of you who speak French. You know, they used to call him Pete. In 1934, Pete was hired by Vincent Astor, who owned the St. Regis Hotel, and which has as its main bar the King Cole Bar, which has that famous, senior moments. Who did the famous King Cole? Maxfield Parrish. The King Cole mural,
right,
in the King Cole Bar, and so it actually gained its popularity in New York. I think New Yorkers are much more receptive to a cocktail in general and something as weirdo as vodka and tomato juice than Parisians. Even now, there is some history of cocktailian lore in Paris, but it's mostly in the America, and particularly in New York. So Bloody Mary was served at the St. Regis Hotel in 1934 by this Pete Petiot. But you're not going to believe who popularized the Bloody Mary. Georgie Jessel.
No, not the I haven't heard that name in years.
But it's a fun name to say.
It comes up in my conversation every once in a while. We do remember Georgie Jessel, right?
Yes, we do.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, he lived to be a nice, ripe old age. And he was on TV all the time until the end. So I think there are probably even some younger people than us who remember Georgie Jessel. But the real story, I've read a lot about this. So this ends up, Georgie Jessel gets this credit, but it's not really due to him, the drink. He didn't invent the drink. You know, he exaggerated everything, and I'm sure as his life went on, he probably even believed himself that he invented the Bloody Mary, half a tomato juice, half vodka. That sounds to me pretty vile. The current, ratio should be either three parts tomato juice to one part vodka, or at the very least, I mean, this is to me a weak drink, one part vodka to four parts tomato juice. That's too weak for me. But anyway, a half and half is too strong. But he was hired by a tomato juice company to promote tomato juice. And this was an obvious way to, and it was, I think, believe even or not, it was in magazine ads, Georgie Jessel with his Bloody Mary. So it wasn't just like on the radio where you expect it. By the way, another, this is a little trivia sidebar here, but we can credit Al Jolson with popularizing bagels and lox, because around the same period, Al Jolson, who had a radio program sponsored by Kraft Cheese or Kraft Products, Kraft had just bought Philadelphia cream cheese, and Jolson had a song, Bagels and Yaks, that he used to sing and I think became very popular, and that's sort of what popularized that. So it's interesting how celebrities can create this aura about a food or, in this case, drink. So here's my Bloody Mary, and this is a very classic Bloody Mary. You can, Jill, go Google it all you want. This is pretty much what you will find.
No, I just want a classic.
Normal Bloody Marys. And having said that, I got to say we have more abnormal Bloody Marys these days than normal ones. I mean, you never know what you're going to get in that glass.
You also never know what you're going to get on Google. So I'm sort of far more interested.
Well, I did, so I can tell you that this is my formula. You know, you
it's
can
classic.
Vary it a little bit. You know, I put in a little bit more vodka, or a little, not less, but because I have minimal vodka here, sort of. So I have 1.5 ounces of vodka, and just 2 or 3 dashes of Worcestershire sauce. The one that I was served yesterday, that tastes like half the bottle was in there. I don't know what would it be density? Or what's the word for, liquids and the way they stratify when standing? There's a word, it's something to do with the density of the liquid. In any case, Worcestershire sauce must settle to the bottom because that was a strong flavor in my Bloody Mary. So 1.5 ounces of vodka, maybe 2 dashes of Worcestershire sauce. To your taste, 2, 3, 4 dashes of Tabasco would be the classic hot pepper sauce, but if you have another favorite, that's okay. There you can do a variation. And a little bit of horseradish, a couple teaspoons at most. At most. The juice of 1/4 of a lemon. And I use a big pinch of celery salt, about 1/8 of a teaspoon of celery salt. I happen to like celery salt, and I keep thinking I should do more with it because I do like the taste. And then 4 ounces of tomato juice. So that's a little bit more than 3 to 1. 4 ounces of tomato juice, and that's it. You stir it. You pour it over ice. You take the kind of glass, and it's usually garnished with a rib of celery, an inside rib with some leaves, classically. And that's a really nice drink. For some reason, it has a reputation of being a hangover cure, but I don't see that. I think you need some protein.
It's a hair of the dog.
A tripe soup.
I think that for the reason it's hangover is it's supposed to jumpstart with the spiciness.
Oh, is that it?
I don't think so. So
that's a classic Bloody Mary for you, and it's a great drink when I think done right.
I
have no problem if somebody wants to be creative and, you know, changes out one little thing or two little things. But what I find is that young people, and to me young means really anybody under 40, have trouble editing themselves This doesn't go just for food. This goes for
It's the difference between curating and editing, basically.
You know, they have to put everything they know in one dish. I used to say about chefs, 2 bites and, or maybe 3 bites and 14 ingredients. Well, you don't need 14 ingredients.
I think that, you know, in the pendulum swing, I think that afterwards comes minimalism, you know, after,
yes.
And so
yes.
Then it gets all stripped down and deconstructed.
My next subject, which is, it's now cool enough to turn the oven on.
I know.
Or anything that even has to be cooked. I mean, I don't know. I only have one strong burner, but if I use that strong burner, it really overwhelms my kitchen with heat. You know, now I have the windows open. I think it's only in the mid-60s, and I don't think it's expected to get that hot today. So I have the ingredients. I'm going to make my now famous baked caponata. I think I've given that recipe a zillion times, but it's in the Southern Italian table. It comes from my friend Franca Micheli of Siracusa, and as time goes on, here's funny, I'm thinking. When I first met Franca, which had to be, I don't know, 20 years ago, and her children were teenagers, her sons were teenagers, they were very health conscious. And so she made a baked version of caponata instead of the usual, which is fried on top of the stove. Now, you know, in Sicily, to turn on the oven, you know, in the old days, would have been not a strong possibility. It took too much fuel. So everything was pretty much cooked on top of the stove, except for holidays. But Franca, being a very modern woman, she and her husband, by the way, and her boys, who are now adults, own a couple car dealerships in Siracusa, so they're not poor either. But they're simple people. Anyway, I mean, Franca still cooks. So the boys didn't want the high-fat version, so she made this baked version, and it's my standard caponata now, because eggplant is a sponge for oil. So if you're frying, what happens, and I must say, in Sicily, not everything is fabulous, you know? I mean, there are bad cooks there, too. And sometimes you see caponata that is swimming in what looks like grease. It's probably less than good quality olive oil, which you don't want to eat either, but it will be olive oil of some kind. But it's sitting there, you know, under a layer of oil. And it's because the eggplant is a sponge, and then when it sits for a while, and you don't eat caponata out of the, you know, right out of the pan, it's something that you let sit and have as a condiment kind of dish. Or, you know, could be, anyway, there are a lot of ways of using and serving caponata. But anyway, it can be pretty gross. So this is, I don't know, do you want me to, I don't think you want me to give the recipe again. It's in my book. I've given it a million times.
No, then you don't have to, because people really should pick up.
And by the way, the story of the Bloody Mary and a whole bunch of other cocktails that were invented in New York City, are in Arthur Schwartz's New York City Food, the paperback edition of, which is identical to the hardcover, except it's not hard, is still available on Amazon.
So
at Southern Italian Table, you can find on Amazon, too.
And should, in my view. Quick
question. In my view, too, because I cook from it all the time. I cook from my own books.
But that's the real
that's
reason.
That's my repertoire, you know?
I heard from someone who had waited all summer for a reservation for some place, and I didn't have the name. And they went there, exactly. They went there, and these are people who know what stuff should taste like, using that word. And it was just terribly disappointing.
It was disappointing. That's exactly the word.
And the thing is that I believe that disappointment is more the rule than the exception. And I just think that's...
You just gave me an idea. Maybe I should, because I have really a lot of not disappointing restaurants in Brooklyn.
Right. You should, not disappointing.
Usually, but not necessarily ethnic. But I should probably do a tour of
not disappointing,
not disappointing restaurants.
Yeah.
Now my latest fixation. I was going to talk about other things I was going to cook now that the heat is broken.
Would like some
but
hints.
This can't wait because
okay.
it's called King's Kitchen, and it's a Chinese roast shop, meaning one of those places that has whole roasted birds and sides of pork hanging in the window. But you go inside, and they do have tables and waiter service, and it's more than just roasted meat. It's roasted meat, all the things you can do with roasted meat, and also very, very good rice noodles, either as chow fun or as they're rice wrappers. Dim sum places have them usually with shrimp. Like one roll will have two whole shrimp inside. This place has a whole menu of differently filled rice rolls. And I love it's a particularly good. People come out with slippery. Well, you know, it's meant to be slippery. The Chinese are very interested, let's say, bad word, in textures. And very often you eat things that have not so much flavor, but have a particular texture. So, you can get for $5 at a table with waiter service. I suggest going midweek because on the weekend it's quite crowded. But, you know, it's still the service is very good, and you don't wait more than 10 minutes for a table, even on a Saturday or Sunday. $5, you get sensational white rice. I don't know what kind of rice they're using or whatever, but it's particularly good white rice. Topped with your roasted meat of choice and a vegetable, whatever the vegetable of the day is. The other day, and all their vegetables are so good. They're cooked just the right length of time, whatever the vegetable is. Even what you think of as bitter vegetables end up being sweet. I don't know what they do with their vegetables. One day I would like to apprentice in that kitchen by the vegetable cook. The other day it was just basically steamed cabbage, but it was so good. I'm sure it was well salted, by the way. But I wouldn't be surprised if something else was done to it. But it was really good. And then for $6 or $6.50, depending, you can get two roast meats, so you can have more. And the roast meats are chicken, duck, chashu, which is the red roasted, we say in English, pork, what they just call roast pig, which is fresh pork meat with the crackling skin. Two people can eat there with a generous tip for $20.
And is it also?
And it's never disappointing.
That is fantastic. Is it ever?
And I haven't even gone to the depths of the menu yet because I see a lot of people come here for kanji, which has never been my favorite thing, but I'm willing to go at it again. And then they have all these rice casseroles, which is a rice in a clay casserole topped with vegetables and meat, or sometimes it's stewed, you know, or braised meat or poultry. And then baked in the oven. And it ends up with this crisp rice bottom, which you scrape off, and that's the treat at the end of the whole deal here. You get to eat this crisp, now well-seasoned rice. I'm making myself hungry here.
And me, and probably the rest of your listeners, which is a little...
So come to Brooklyn. I could take you there, not disappointing ever. I have other Chinese places that are not disappointing ever. We have... very good Asian food in Brooklyn, now that I'm thinking about it. We have very good Vietnamese banh mi shops, a lot of good, never-disappointing ramen shops. I'm trying to think, there's my Azerbaijani place.
I know, but what I need is like one simple... How much time do we have, Marshall? We've got plenty of time.
4 minutes.
So... give me one thing to cook this week now that I can turn my oven on.
Okay. Now, baked caponata would be one thing. And spare ribs. So, you know, I've been playing with spare ribs. And usually prior to Labor Day, they go on sale because they want to, you know, people And I think I did this, the difference between baby backs and regular old spare ribs, and there's a third one. But in any case, I've played with all three. And I have to say, I like the baby backs only for one reason. That's a curved part of the rib. And when you put them in a roasting pan, they make their own little rack, and they don't sit in any liquid you might put in. But then I've done your regular spare ribs, which end up having a flatter rib, and they're okay too. So, I've been playing around with this, and I got tired of the rub that I was using initially, which was a couple tablespoons of fennel seed and a tablespoon of cumin and a couple teaspoons of black peppercorn, all ground up in a mortar and pestle, and then stir in a couple tablespoons of, I happen to have smoked paprika. If you don't have smoked, normal paprika is okay too. But, of course, smoked paprika gives a tiny, and really only a tiny bit of smokiness. And I use sweet one. Anyway, I got tired of doing this, and I decided I'm going to see what salt and pepper and nothing else for the preliminary cooking, and then glaze it with something, you know, with a little bit more sugar than I would normally use, like a normal, you could even use out of the bottle, your favorite barbecue sauce. Everybody seems to have a favorite barbecue sauce. So, but it's about the technique with the spare ribs. You know, this is to turn the oven on 200 degrees, 300 degrees. And, you know, at 300 degrees, even my kitchen doesn't get heated up that much. And you put the ribs, well salted and peppered, in a roasting pan so that they lay flat. And cover the pan tightly. Oh, I put a little bit of liquid, let's say a half a cup of liquid, on the bottom of a big roasting pan, something other than water. Originally, I was using apple juice, and, you know, I don't drink apple juice, so I still had some apple juice in the fridge, so I use apple juice. But I'm sure, you know what would be very good would be tea. I happen to know, because I've done this with other meats, tea works very well. But if you have nothing, you could even put some white wine in the bottom of the pan. But only a tiny bit, just to keep some moisture in there. And then tightly close the pan with aluminum foil, put it in your 200-degree oven for 300-degree oven for 2 hours. Don't even peek. When you open up the pan, you're probably going to have sufficiently done ribs. You don't want them falling off the bone, but you do want them very tender. Somebody told me there's a test. You lift up the rack, and if they droop, they're done. Well, you know, it's like, I don't know, throwing spaghetti against the wall.
That's fun.
And now you can put those in the refrigerator even overnight. And then the next day you finish them off. But I suggest you bring them to room temperature before you do the final cooking, which is, brushed well with barbecue sauce. And then I put it several inches below the broiler. I don't have a good broiler, so several inches below the broiler, even though they tell me that's 500 degrees, I don't believe it. And, you know, you could turn them once or twice. You don't want the sauce, which has a good sugar content, to burn. So anyway, that's it. They're really good.
Yum. All right.
So you can turn your oven on for that.
I have been turning my oven on. Now I'm just happy to do it. Wait.
Bye. Bye.
Arthur Schwartz, the food maven, here on Robin Hood Radio. Underwriting support for Arthur Schwartz, the food maven, from Hathaway Young, located on South Center Street in Millerton. Flawless Catering and Event Planning, HathawayYoung.com. John Andrews Restaurant on the Hillsdale Road in South Egremont, 413-528-3467. On the web, JARestaurant.com. Rubiner's Cheesemongers and Groceries on Main Street in Great Barrington, 413-528-0488, Rubiner's.com. In Hillsdale, New York, Hillsdale Home Chef, with two beautiful teaching classes, and they've got classes to go in those cooking rooms. More information,
518-325-7000, hgshomechef.com.